All right. Welcome to another episode. That's my intro from now on.
another podcast.
Another week, another Wednesday night. Here we are, right? I've got my cool mood lighting on. It's like 1,000 degrees in the office. This room, man, I don't get it. It's like a sauna in here.
I mean, I'll take it. We're finally starting to warm up a little.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I don't think.
Yeah. I was out in the backyard today, this afternoon, without like 4 layers of clothing on. It was good.
That's always a win.
Yeah. I'll take it at this point. It's what, the third week of April? And it was in the negative on the weekend, so I'll take it.
It's supposed to snow. It's supposed to snow next week, apparently.
What?
Can't believe this. Yeah.
No.
That's not okay.
That is not okay. You know, I don't know if you use Google Photos, but we were complaining about it, you know, how cold it's been or whatever. And then every once in a while, I'll get these notices on my phone. It's like, you know, 5 years ago today, 1 year ago today. And so I get this 1 year ago one, let's say last week sometime, and I flip it open and it's my backyard covered in snow. So it's not unheard of, but I'm just kind of sick of the cold weather at this point. So I really just want, we're going to get snow next week. Okay. So let's go with that. Let's hope it doesn't happen. Snow next week, and then it'll be 25 the day after. There's no spring, right? It's winter and summer now.
Instant jump, no transition. You're just directly in it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I am just noticing one little technical thing. My audio is coming through quite low. I don't know. We're just going to wing it. We'll let Descript figure it out later. You know what it is? I know what it is. Hold on. I rebooted.
What is it?
I rebooted, and I bet you any money my Mac did the thing it always does. The input volume on my mic is now 50%.
There you are.
Hello. Yeah, now I got to dial it back over here. Wow. Descript's going to earn its money tonight trying to audio level all of this. All right. Let's jump in. There is a lot of stuff. I don't think we're going to get through. I've been sort of sharing articles through the whole week. I don't think we're going to possibly get through it all. But let's start with the AWS news of the week. The first thing I put on my list was more astronomically high numbers. Amazon's agreed to invest $25 billion in Anthropic. And in exchange, Anthropic has agreed to spend $100 billion on the AWS platform.
Credits.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I still think that there's a lot of this Ponzi scheme is too strong of a word, but I remember watching somebody on, it was a YouTube channel at some point, and they're just like, and I think maybe you and I have talked about this, just feels like a shell game at this point. It's like one company saying we'll do this, the other company saying we'll do that in exchange, and then 6 months from now it's different. So I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, it feels pretty circular, right? I mean, like, they had the cash on hand, right, for at least up to this point. I kind of wonder what the cash reserves are looking like for these companies after they're doing this huge CapEx spend on data centers. But I guess it makes sense to give them some, like, buy them with the credits, essentially, is what you're doing here, right?
Yeah. Which really, in all fairness, like, obviously the scale numbers are huge, but this is, I think all the hyperscalers do this.
Right? Yeah.
If you spend money here, we'll give you credits as long as you keep your workloads on our platform, right? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that for years. So it's nothing new. It's just the scale, I think, is new here and the numbers we're talking.
Yeah, this makes Amazon by far the biggest shareholder of Anthropic without, I mean, excluding probably Dario, I guess, and internal people, but
and remember, this is on top of, I think it was about $8 billion they announced
like
a couple months ago. Now the other thing that I wrote down as I was reading this, you know, 25 billion is a great headline. It's 5 billion now. Okay, not chump change, it's 5 billion now, and then 20 billion later based on commercial decisions, right? So it's like a trade in a professional league. You get this person a first round draft pick and future considerations. It sort of feels like the 20 billion is there, but, you know, depending on what actually happens,
Okay.
Is it the full 20 billion? Who knows? And the other thing that I thought of when I was reading this article is last week we talked about the letter to shareholders and how comment in there was, we're leaving money on the table because we can't get the electricity for all of the demands. So my other thing is, okay, it's great to say we're going to spend all this money, but just last week you were telling us there was no electricity to be had. So they better figure out do you remember that old Keanu Reeves movie? He is scientist and yeah, that's a good Keanu role, right? He doesn't feel like a scientist, but he's playing some sort of scientist. He's inventing some sort of new energy source. And of course, you know, the spies come and take it and they blow up the entire industrial district of Chicago or something like that. And then the rest of the movie is just him trying to stay ahead of them. I think it's him and Rachel Weisz.
Okay. That's not Johnny Mnemonic.
No. Johnny Mnemonic is where he tries to upload too much data into his head, even though he doesn't have enough storage. And then he's got to get it out of his head before his head pops.
I think I got it. I think it's Chain Reaction.
Chain Reaction. There you go.
Yeah.
If you've never seen it, it's worth a watch. And if you haven't seen Johnny Mnemonic, I'm getting ahead of myself because this is usually how we wrap the show. But if you have not seen Johnny Mnemonic, it is a classic. It is so bad, I think it's good. It's one of those. Our favorite genre of movies. It's so bad, it's good. Like Killer Sofa.
Oh my God, Killer Sofa. What a time to be alive and watching film.
I think it's the movie. I can't remember. It's like somebody's leaving the apartment and they're on the street getting into the cab and they show you the view up to the apartment and the sofa's looking out the window at them.
The best shot in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Is the menacing sofa watching you from the window. Oh, it's so good. Yeah,
forget all the Gen AI news. We're just going to talk movies. Killer Pants, the one where the tires roll.
Slacks is so good.
Slacks. That's it. Where the one where the tires just rolling through the desert, killing people. Yeah. Come on. Fantastic stuff. So, yeah, my thought was here, wow, I've really digressed. Chain Reaction, they come up with some sort of new crazy energy source, right? We're going to need to do that. We got to pull Keanu Reeves onto it. We got to give him the industrial district in a small city and have him figure out fusion power for us, because otherwise,
there's going to have to be a whole lot of solar and nuclear build out. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
And that's not even counting that we don't have the chips to meet demand right now either. Right.
In general. So, another interesting sort of segue off of this, or tangent maybe, is I was just having a conversation with a customer, and this kind of goes again to the idea of just the expenses that are sort of being, I don't know what the word is, because all these hyperscalers are essentially consuming everything, right? Yeah. We've talked about this a lot, how it's driving up prices of storage and RAM and stuff like that. So I was just talking to somebody and they're like, we have to figure out how to deploy a whole ton of workspaces. And I was like, why? And they're like, because the corporate laptops are going up $1,500 each. A minimum.
Wow.
And they're like, so we're not going to do that. We have to figure something out. You can either bring your own device, which I love, right? Here's a multinational company and they're like, well, we don't want to pay for the laptop, but if you want to bring your own laptop, you could pay for it. And we're okay with bring your own device again, because it's too costly for us to buy you a device. So they're basically trying to figure out how to ramp up workspaces again. All right. We saw this with COVID when everybody was working from home. We've pulled everybody back into the offices, depending if, whether you think that's right or not. I guess we could have a whole podcast on that. But, and now we're going back to workspaces because the cost of the hardware is so high.
That's crazy. I mean, that kind of goes back to people saying you'll end up renting your PC at some point. I hate the idea of that future, right? But
you just took my next talking point off of this. The other thing I just thought of with this is it almost feels like when I first got into computing, you can tell already because I got lots of gray in my beard, but I worked at a company where we had dumb terminals and a mainframe, and I worked on a dumb terminal, right? It was literally connected the compute power somewhere else. It was like, this is really going to date myself. It was a green screen. It was like, it was so
this was like some, even DOS at that point.
I don't even know what it was. It was some sort of, I'm just going to call it a mainframe IBM OS, system, right? Probably. Yeah. It was an IBM system attached to these. It was a great job. I'm having fun with it, but I worked in this office with just these enormous printers. And all I did all night, every night on the night shift was talk to that dumb terminal and run print jobs all night long. It was a fantastic job. Drank a lot of coffee. But the thought came to my head was just like you said, like maybe we're getting back to dumb terminals because you're not going to be able to afford like putting that horsepower in your laptop on your desk anymore. It's got to be somewhere else and you rent it while you use it. Maybe that's going to happen. I don't know.
It kind of feels like it's going that way. It seems like we're deciding that the hyperscalers are the ones who get to have all of this compute, right? So
yeah.
For better, for worse.
Yeah. If I'm going to have to find enthusiast, that.
It sucks, but.
Yeah. I think the days of maybe building your own are not behind us. I think that's being overly dramatic, but you know, the idea of getting 32, 64 gig of RAM for like 50, 60, 80 bucks. I think those days are gone. Probably not going to come back.
Yeah. Not unless there's some sort of like catastrophic. I mean, they're probably not coming back.
They're not coming back at that point, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like once a manufacturer says I can sell this RAM for three or storage or whatever you want to call for three times what I used to be able to do, you know, they're in the business to make money. They're not going to go, oh, well, there's lots more RAM now, so we'll lower the prices. It's going to stay artificially inflated, right? I think so. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I thought this was a neat article in the sense just the scale of the cache, the little sort of, you know, the sort of what hinges on future considerations, and then the analogies that we can draw to kind of a couple interesting conversations I've had this week. So
yeah, I mean, you never know what can happen with these deals too, right? Like OpenAI backed out of all of that. Was it SSDs that they were going to buy, I think, or was it RAM? But anyways.
Yeah, I don't know. Hardware.
It was a huge amount of hardware that they were going to purchase, right? And that fell through, so.
Yeah. Oh, and actually, speaking of OpenAI, don't forget that Amazon also gave OpenAI, probably in a deal very similar to this, wasn't it $50 billion or something? So, yeah. Wow. Crazy stuff, right? What else do I have on my list? Oh, the other one, sort of, I didn't get a lot of AWS news. So that first article could kind of be AWS / Gen AI. This week, every time I looked at the AWS news site, it felt like, again, the thing I generally joke about, new EC2 instances and new regions and Connect, which neither of them I care about. So I just kind of kept clearing the feed and moving on. So the only other thing that jumped out at me, and only because... Not only because, but because we talked about it, I think last week, was Lambda now supports using S3 files.
Yeah, this is like the perfect use case for that, right?
Yeah.
If you want to do like small batch compute jobs that you can spread out across like 1,000 functions or whatnot, that's a great way to do it.
And that was the thing that's the thing I wrote down too, was the fact that can have multiple Lambdas all accessing the same file system, which makes a lot of sense because we talked about last week how this is built on top of EFS. And that was always the idea with EFS is, you know, single file system, thousands of EC2 instances. Now you're doing the same thing with Lambda.
Yeah, probably they just put a wrapper in front of S3 essentially that handles the file reads and writes. And there you go.
Yeah.
I just saw this on the news feed. Amazon Aurora serverless up to 30% better performance, smarter scaling, and still scales to zero. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So I guess if you're on Aurora serverless, which, as far as Aurora goes, you probably should be for most use cases.
I would think so.
You can look forward to that. So that's kind of exciting.
My open brain's going to get faster.
It will. 30% faster.
Yeah. I always like 30% faster for no change in cost. That's always good, right?
That's a good deal. Yeah.
Well, I wonder if they moved in a pure speculation, right? But that 30% faster number is often the number you'll hear when you talk about going from something that isn't Graviton to Graviton. I wonder if the underlying architecture has changed.
Interesting. Or maybe 30% more efficient anyways.
Maybe.
For the price. Yeah. Yeah, that could totally be the case. I could see that.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it. Do you have any other AWS news that you stumbled across that you found interesting?
No, it was pretty barren this week.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all figuring out how to come up with $25 billion. My Prime membership's going to go up, and they're going to start charging me more for Prime Video too, or I'm going to have to watch ads.
Eventually, they're going to have to bundle Anthropic subs into the Prime subscriptions.
Yeah, exactly.
The rate it's going.
Yeah, it's one of these weeks. I will change the Echo calendar to stop interrupting us. But podcasting Travers. Yeah, here we are. Thanks, Echo.
It'll happen in maybe 2 or 6 months.
Yeah, eventually. Like, I don't like looking at my calendar. I let the Echo remind me, so I keep falling into this trap. My favorite segment, the transition from AWS to Gen AI news. Any personal project news that you want to talk about today, this week?
Personal project news. Let me think here. So I remember we talked about last week, I was doing kind of that NLP processing on our podcast history. So that's kind of progressed, and I'm picking out topics and making like a map of what we've talked about, what kind of articles we've referenced, what I can pull up for follow up. And then I've kind of stepped away from the vibe coding for a few days now, just to give myself a break. And I've started to pick up some just like starting to do some practice problems, like for practical coding challenges, right? Like, are you familiar with like codewars.com?
I'm not, no.
Okay. So it's essentially like, if you know, essentially there, it's a repository of programming problems, right? So for example, the one I'm looking at right now is Huffman encoding. So it's a problem, they give you the problem where you have, in this case, it's a natural language problem. You have to build a tree of all the letters in the string they give you and whatnot. And you have to make the program work against the test suite, for example, for the problem, right?
Okay.
And that's how that goes. So I'm just trying to flex those developer muscles again a little bit more in the actual hands-on keyboard kind of way.
Yep.
And give myself a little break. I don't know. How about you? Where are you at?
You know what? I did take a break. It's funny that you said that. I think I was also, it kind of goes to what we've been talking about over the last little while. You can do so much stuff in short times now because of these coding tools. But like, I think it's also very common, at least for me, is like, okay, well, I'm going to do it all today. And, and like, I saw the other day, if you go into Claude CLI, I didn't realize this, but if you look at your usage, there's other tabs that you can move through in that usage field, and they show you like monthly views of how much you're talking to Claude. And I was like, oh my God, man. Like,
how was it?
it was like 0 to 100 in about, oh man, I should remember this. I want to say it wasn't that long ago, like end of February, beginning of March. Like I just was occasionally sporadically using it, and I blame it all on that 5 levels of AI autonomy or whatever it was called. Like that just triggered my brain. I was like, I think I might be using these tools wrong. Like I'm using it for a fancy Google, and I don't know if I'm getting all the value out of these things that I could or should be getting. And I just, well, we talked about it, right? I'm like, okay, I'm just going to start. I know people are, oh, it's not production ready, blah, 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 whatever. it's a one person tool. Like nobody's ever going to touch it except me. So it's okay that I'm building it without, you know, all the rigor that you might do in an enterprise application. I get it, right?
No, you have a specific workflow you're trying to fit.
Yeah,
right?
Like, exactly. I have paid for Claude by turning off a bunch of SaaS tools. So it's a wash in the end, right? Like I'm not ahead, but the subscription is not in addition to the SaaS tools because I've turned a bunch off. But I did take a little bit of a break over the weekend, played some Stellaris, just stopped thinking about stuff. Now it didn't last very long. So I'm back in the grind, and I gotta tell you on the personal project thing, I'm obsessed with the Kanban board. Like I can't stop thinking about the Kanban board. It's ridiculous. So what I've noticed is it's just a Kanban board. Like, okay, I've got columns. I drag cards between the columns. It's a little different in the sense that it's got an MCP wrapper in it, so my agents can talk to it. Right. I built some other tools. I think I was telling you, like, I've got an account finder tool. So now when you create a card, you can bind it to an account. And then, so now when I'm looking at that card, I know it's in my demo account, right? That's where I have to do the work. And I've put some deep links in there so I can click it. It takes me to my demo account. So, like, it's, again, it's a very customized tool for the way that I like to work. Okay. But just like probably over the weekend, you know, sort of asynchronously in the back of my head, this must have been going on. And I was like, well, shit, it's still just a Kanban board. Like, I create cards, I drag them between the columns. It's nice that the agents can do some of that work for me, but it's a Kanban board. And am I not thinking about this right? So I did a lot of brainstorming. I guess it was yesterday? I don't know, man. The days are all blended together. I did a bunch of brainstorming with Opus 4.7, which I got to say is impressive. And it helped me come up with, like, I don't want to call it like a Gen AI version of a Kanban board, because that feels like AI washing. Like AI Kanban, right? You know, AI tool X, they're all like this now. What I'm trying to do, though, is, like, I was thinking about it and I'm like, okay, if again, the five levels of AI, if I put a card in there, like, I create a card, you and I are talking about something and you're like, you need to do X for me. So I'm kind of thinking, okay, if I put that card in there, do I really need to do that? Like, if it's really something simple, right? Why do I have to go into the Kanban and put a comment in there, drag it from the backlog into the in progress, yada, yada, yada. If it's simple, couldn't I have an agent pick that up, classify it for me, like, this is easy or this isn't easy, so therefore a human must do it, but it is easy, so I will take care of it for you. Like a simple thing, I need to update some documentation on an as-built doc or something. Let's be honest, these agents, in my opinion, are going to write better documentation than the vast majority of developers, right?
Yeah.
You don't like to do it. It's always the last thing you're going to do, and it gets pushed off. So, definitely. You know, and then somebody finally grinds your gears over it. So you spend 20 minutes and you write it down and you're like, here, and then you move on to the next task. So, like, for those kinds of things. So I was brainstorming with Claude about this, and back and forth. And I think I have a little bit of a plan to go forward, in the sense that I'm calling it the what now agent for the time being, whereas instead of me having to go through all the cards and look at it, sort of tasking an agent to periodically go through all the cards and go, this is really simple, why don't we just do this now? And it's so simple that I'll do it for you. Like documentation as a simple example.
Yeah.
So I've been working on that. It's really, really early and it's a bit sketchy. I've got it tied to my own personal project, and it goes a little off the rails here or there, but I think there's something there. So I think my time away from vibe coding is probably gone, and
right back in,
like, you know, neck deep in this thing again. Claude was super excited, as it always is. It's like, I'll create cards for this and we'll do this, and I'm like, okay, cool your jets there, guy. Let's just do this one thing. So I've got this sort of what now agent sort of working. Maybe I'm hoping by next week I'll have a bit better implementation of it where it's not so odd, but I'm going to try, and this is the part that's kind of mucking me up a little bit, I'm going to try to run it off of my computer. So the Kanban board locally,
like on a container.
Yeah, okay. In a container. Okay. I originally thought maybe Agent Core, Bedrock Agent Core, because we had talked about that last week. I was like, hey, let's go use this. So again, this is what I love about these tools, right? There was a lot of back and forth. And I'm like, no, you got to show me a reference to this. Like, use the official documentation. I don't necessarily think what you're saying is true. So go check it. There was a lot of that back and forth. Clicked on some links, did some reading. I think for this particular agent, it's going to be a container agent running on ECS and Fargate. And then maybe for some other things, I might try to roll Agent Core in later. I got a bunch of ideas bouncing around. So yeah, I took a little break. the break is over. So here we go
right
again.
Back into it.
Yeah, right back into it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, yeah, one of the reasons I stopped was just because, like, am I doing the right? I was wondering if I was doing the right thing, working with the right abstraction. So that totally makes sense to me. I'm kind of curious to hear about what you think about 4.7. It sounds like you like it in the
in
Cloud Code.
Yeah. Which is actually a great transition into the next article. Unless you have, you had another comment there or something, another personal project update or anything?
I was just thinking, have you heard of like the Pi coding agent at all?
No, I haven't.
It's like a minimal coding agent by, I can't remember the developer's name now, but it's open source.
Yeah.
And it's what powers, I think OpenCode uses their library for a lot of their agent tooling.
Okay.
But essentially the idea is the models are so trained on this reinforcement loop of getting the task and doing the thing and then using like the search, like a grep tool or whatnot and text edit tool that you actually don't need to build that much into the system to get it to do those things.
Yeah.
So I've been kind of messing around with that.
Okay.
But I think it's kind of funny just to think about like, what are the things like the model intelligence is not the same as human intelligence. So like what parts of the workflow actually matter for getting good results out of this, which is why the Kanban thing is interesting, right? Because it's like, okay, you have all these tasks in a board. What is this actually if you're a model, right? This is just like a database, I guess, that someone's interacting with pretty much.
Right.
So it's like, what do you need to do to improve that for a model? I'm not sure, but
yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it works. In addition to the Kanban, I've got the OpenBrain back there too, right? Which has a lot of context. And one of the things that I did early on, when you create a card now, when you like, you know, I say, talk to Travers about X, what it does is it makes a call, MCP call to OpenBrain and says, tell me anything you know about this project where Brett and Travers are working on it together. And it pulls that in to the card. So my thought was, that's sort of what triggered this. My thought was, okay, well, I have that additional context in the card. That context isn't really helpful for me. It's helpful, but I generally wouldn't refer to that. I would look in my Obsidian or something, or maybe email for a reference. That's really meant for agent context. And that's sort of what made me think about it. I'm like, I wonder if I could, since I have that additional context associated with the cards, I wonder if an agent could pick that up and say, okay, I know what this is and we could do this. Like, we don't need a human to help us with this. We'll just go. I don't know. It could go horribly wrong.
Right?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. Isn't everybody just building their own OpenClaw at this point?
I guess so.
Yeah, kind of.
Building this kind of model system. Mind you, you don't have all of the security risks of putting your email into it and whatnot. But
supposedly.
hopefully.
I should run another. Scan. What was it called? The security agent scan before I start having to pay for it. I should bang away on the Kanban board and OpenBrain now just to see what it does. All right. So let's transition to Opus 4.7. What came out last week, I guess, the marketing sort of built for complex, long running tasks, the same thing everybody says nowadays. I really haven't, somebody's running a leaf blower. I hope it's not coming through the mic too much.
I don't hear it.
Okay, good. You can tell the nice weather's around. The entire neighborhood's like just sprung to life in one day. It's just unbelievable. So I don't know if I've really noticed much of a difference between 4.6 and 4.7, but I have heard anecdotally from a lot of people, and this is in quotes in various Discord channels or servers, it's dumber than it was before.
This is what I wanted to ask you about in your experience, because I've been hearing the same thing a lot on social media and just in general. Like, the experience is like there's something in the harness has probably changed, that it's not giving the same quality.
In fairness, earlier in the week or late last week, whenever this happened, I did flip from Opus back to Sonnet, like Sonnet 4.6. Okay. Now, why did I do that? I think I was getting a little, I was reading too much about the token churn. And oh my God, if you're using 4.7, you're going to blow through all your tokens and you're just, you're going to be, you know, out of luck. So I was like, oh no. And I switched. And I will say that I think I did notice that it wasn't sort of, smart isn't the right word because, you know, it's really just a prediction engine. It seemed to be struggling with some things that it wasn't struggling with before. Like I've got a pretty good system where, you know, GitLab is the single source of truth for all the dev work. And we were getting into a groove. Like it was able to pick those cards up and just move, right? Those issues. And I noticed late last week that a couple times I was like, wait, why, like, escape? What, why are you doing that? Like, you shouldn't be doing that. And here's, oops, sorry. Yeah. And then I'd be like, okay, so just, you know, reset and do it again. And then I'm watching it and it goes back and does the same thing. I had Kuro vibes, right? I was like, what is happening? But in fairness, I switched to Sonnet. It got over that little hiccup. And then I restarted again a couple days later and I've been back to 4.7. And I really haven't noticed this sort of thing you're hearing. Oh, it's dumber than 4.6. The one thing that I have noticed, and again, this could just be like, what do they call it when you, you're taking sugar pills, but you're thinking you're taking the real stuff and you feel better? The
placebo effect. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. It could be the placebo effect. I do think that the output that I'm getting back, so I ask it a question, right? We were talking about the brainstorming stuff.
Right.
The language in that output has changed to the point where it's using some terms like, its new thing now is a convoy. Hey, this was a detailed convoy. And I'm like, do you
convoy.
Mean
convoy?
Like, I'm like, do you mean trucks? Like a whole bunch of trucks in a row? Or are you
what
being,
I assume that means.
Are you trying to be cool? And that's now short form for conversation. So I'm like, okay, I don't quite understand that. Another thing that it seems to have done is, do you want me to sketch this out? There's some new phrases that I've noticed that I've never seen before, but the detail, the amount of detail that's coming back is extensive. I had some other adjectives that I think are being a little silly, like staggering, or, you know, we could have made a clip for a headline, but like even just working on the Kanban stuff, as we're brainstorming, the amount of stuff coming back and the level of detail in it is quite good.
It's very,
it's
very verbose. Yeah.
Yeah. It's verbose. And it reminds me again of, it's amazing. I want to see your topic map as it gets a little bigger. Cause I keep thinking we're talking about the same things. This goes back to what we've discussed a couple times, is the importance of actually reading that.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like if you don't read that, you get what you get. Right. So it's really forcing me to read a lot, even more than I think what was there before. But I've been overall, I've been happy with it, except for that little blip where I switched it to Sonnet. Cause it was like somebody bonked it on the head. Like it just wasn't making any sense. Or I'm like, what is happening? And then the other
thing
is,
what did they do to you?
Yeah, what's happened? Didn't everybody freak out when ChatGPT got rid of like
4.0, the classic
what's
the word, AI psychosis machine? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And then I haven't really noticed it churning through a lot more tokens. It obviously uses more tokens. They've introduced a new usage level or something, whatever you want to call it. Like there's it's called X high, which is between high and max. And that's the default
to line up with the ChatGPT verbiage. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I don't know. I anecdotally have heard people saying they're burning through all their tokens and stuff. I haven't experienced that. I use it every day. I don't want to say all day, but I use it extensively and I'm not running into the token issue. So I don't know. Have you played around with it at all?
I have. And I've noticed the same kind of thing where you're saying it's quite verbose in the responses, but it is like when it's kind of interesting because you get a lot more variability with this one, it feels like, right? Like for some weird tasks that it was able to do before just fine, you might find that the prompts don't work or it's not able to complete them. But like the ceiling is higher now, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like I had some programming tasks that 4.6 wasn't able to really do, and 4.7 was able to
Yeah.
get it done for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like maybe they like it almost feels like, do you remember when ChatGPT was doing like the router model people were talking about in front of the to kind of route various levels of requests as like a cost
Oh,
saving thing?
yeah, maybe,
Kind of
right?
makes you wonder. Yeah, kind of makes me wonder if there's something else like that going on here. I know they've been pretty constrained on the amount of chips or GPUs that they have access to, so maybe there's
Yeah.
something going on with that, but
Yeah. Yeah, there was another article in here. Let's use that as our segue. Where was it? I won't be able to find it now.
But I haven't had any problems on open code with that,
No,
so
no. There
yeah.
was something around sort of exactly what you just said, right? Like they were having performance issues, rely like just they just didn't have the compute to handle it all. Which led to outages. And I know there was one day, again, it seems sporadic, right? Like there was one day in one of the Discord channels where there were a lot of people having problems. And I was just like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, knock on wood, mine's fine. I'm just gonna keep on doing what I'm doing. So yeah, there has been a weird little blip, right, over the last little while, which I guess really shouldn't be surprised with these new models. Like I guess you just don't know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like it's a you're deploying a whole new set of weights to the API, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah. Who knows,
I'm sure they
right?
test it, but
Yeah. Yeah. They're not like cowboying it, right? Somebody flick a switch and let's see what happens. I wouldn't think.
surely not.
Yeah. Well, maybe Claude 4.6 wrote Claude 4.7.
Maybe.
It's creating itself. Okay, what else do I have? Oh, speaking of Anthropic, did you get a chance to look at that article, The Architectural Flaw at the Core of Anthropic's MCP?
I did see this, so this is quite bad.
Yeah, it's quite bad. And what caught my eye was because, like, again, for the last couple of weeks, all I've been talking about is MCPs, right? And there's another article which I didn't put in the list. I may have shared it in Discord, but I didn't put it in the list to talk about because I thought we had enough to talk about. It was around this idea of headless AI, that for personal AI projects, there's going to be no interface. It's going to be MCPs and stuff like that, right? Talk basically APIs talking to other APIs. And that caught my attention with this one as well. But this is scary, right? Basically remote execution on any system that's running a vulnerable implementation of this MCP SDK that Anthropic maintains.
Right, remote code, arbitrary command execution on any system. What was the actual issue? You
Yeah,
ever
I didn't put the issue. I thought it was too technical, right? Like I was just like, okay, this is bad. What I wrote down was like another example of a supply chain issue, right?
Oh, there's
Right?
like 10 different
Yeah,
CVEs
10
in here that are
CVs,
all
yeah.
critical in
Yep.
the supply chain
Yeah.
that are just disastrous. So the Light LLM thing is in here, GPT researchers in here, LangChain, ChatChat. There's all kinds of stuff in here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Because essentially, if I remember in the article, the bug is in the SDK itself that comes from Anthropic. So if you're using that SDK to build an MCP server, then you are exposed to these issues, fundamental issues within the MCP SDKs. And the thing that I thought was really interesting is that the security firm notified Anthropic, and I wrote this down in quotes. So I'm hoping I didn't muck this up, but Anthropic declined to modify, saying that the behavior was expected.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, you're already running OpenClaw anyways, right? Well, you might as well expose your computer some more.
Yeah.
That's
So,
crazy.
yeah. And again, to pick up the theme, right? This we talked about this a while ago, this idea of just can you trust these repositories anymore? And they gave you a whole list. There was, I don't know, could I say like half a dozen remediation options in the article? And one of them was, do not use MCPs from an untrusted source.
Bottom line. It's there's so many, it's the new fad, the new trend are these dependency attacks. Like, we're going to see more of this year. And it's like Simon Wilson said, there's going to be a terrible disaster because of one of these probably, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's going to be bad. So like, I just think again, you know, I'm a big fan of the Docker toolkit, the Docker, Docker gateway toolkit or whatever, MCP toolkit, whatever they call it. Like without that, I would be in trouble, but I don't install anything out of their repo. I build those images from scratch. Right. It's probably overkill, but I just, every week we talk about these things and I'm just like, do I really want to just go in there and go, I want that. I'll just click it. Like it's kind of, I used that analogy before. It's kind of like walking down the street. You see a USB key sitting on the ground, right? No, well, I'll just plug this in. What's the worst that could happen? Right.
Right.
Yeah. Your mom taught you not to eat candy off the ground. You don't plug a USB key in that you find in your computer. These repos are increasingly kind of feeling like the candy that you find on the street or the USB key you find on the sidewalk. You just honestly probably shouldn't trust it.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know. What do you do at this point? Do you, I guess you switch to Go?
I don't know.
Write all your apps in something that doesn't have external dependencies.
I don't know. Like, and even with what I'm saying, I'm being a little silly about it. With the MCP stuff and everything, like you, even if I decide not to use the MCP from Docker, I'm still trusting an image somewhere. Like your chain breaks at some point. So I guess the idea here is, I guess you could work hard to reduce the number of people that are involved in providing that to you as a way to reduce potential risk, but you're never going to be risk-free.
No, that's true. Unless you're hand rolling the assembly on the chip, like even at that point, right?
Yeah.
Like when, it's good that people are becoming more aware of this stuff, hopefully, that this is a problem. I know it's come up so much in NPM this year alone, and with all this LLM stuff, it's just easier than ever to write malicious code, right? Yeah. So
It reminds me of two things. It reminds me of the old days of Wi-Fi, right? Where people just didn't understand that open Wi-Fi was bad. And you could just walk through your neighborhood and connect to any hotspot you wanted. Because the vast majority of them, unless you were a technical person, the vast majority of them were just open, right? Like, and you don't see that anymore, for the most part. I'm sure there's still open Wi-Fi hotspots, but, you know, for the most part, like, if I fire up my laptop and tell it to go find a Wi-Fi network, they all have the little locks on them, right? This reminds me, it's just growing pains. And I think it's just more painful growing pains because the tools are so much more powerful now than what we were dealing with, you know, a decade ago. So the blast radius, to use that term, is significantly more dangerous than maybe your open Wi-Fi networks in your neighborhood.
what's the saying? If it's free, then you're the product. kind of applies.
Kind of. Yeah. Sorry. The other funny analogy that I wrote down was it's kind of like community-based AMIs.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, why would you ever use one of those? Like, I'm sorry. I'm sure you're really nice. I still don't trust you. So
trust me, bro. My Ubuntu image is super good and friendly.
There's no Bitcoin mining on this thing. You're perfectly fine to use it. I think, to your point, I think we're going to see a lot more of this. And I think the way I'm trying to approach it is, how can I reduce that risk profile as best as I can?
Yeah, reduce your exposure, reduce your packages where you can, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how people solve the package manager problem, right? Because that's the main vector for a lot of this stuff is, you know, your maintainer gets compromised and then they push malicious code to the repo and then everyone down the stream gets, you know, gets hijacked. Yeah.
Well, didn't you mention, though, a couple weeks ago, this idea of just like pinning versions instead of always building the latest version? Maybe you pin your versions to a couple versions before and you just don't get all the latest and greatest. You wait and let somebody else, unfortunately, take the risks that you're not willing to do anymore.
Yeah, I think that's probably what you should do if you're working with state-of-the-art libraries, right? Like, let someone else be the early adopter and eat that risk, right? Because it's just going up. Yep. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've lost an article somewhere about Anthropic, but anyways, that's enough Anthropic talk for the day. Let's change to our other favorite tool, Codex. There was a neat article about all of the updates in Codex, and I feel bad because Codex is kind of like, for me at least, I think you're using it a lot more than I am, but Codex for me is kind of like the black sheep of the family, right? It's running, it's in my toolbar, and I'm like, I'll deal with that later, and then I go back to Claude. But there were a lot of really good updates, like it's able to use all of the applications on your computer now, including doing things like clicking on stuff, opening apps, writing, all sorts of stuff. It's got its own in-app browser, which I guess we shouldn't be surprised about because OpenAI really got into the browser game there for a while and then backed away. Mm. So it looks like maybe they've rolled that into Codex. And
makes sense,
right? You can use it for front-end development. It even said like you can click on things in the browser to sort of tell Codex, like, look at this part here, look at this part over here. Pretty cool. Oh, plugins. Of course, we've got plugins, right? Do you trust them or it's up to you? But
that's
there's like,
question.
Yeah, there's a huge library of plugins available for like all the tools that you could ever imagine.
Whatever you want.
Yep. Yeah, whatever you want. They're all there. And then the thing that I have used, and again, I'm not doing it. I'm not treating it like I should, is the automation. So they're talking a lot about additional automations that are available in it now. I'm still mucking around with it because of that idea of sandboxing. It's just, I haven't spent enough time. I don't know what you're doing with Codex. Any thoughts on this one?
Codex is my go-to after OpenCode lately. And Claude Code's kind of dropped for me. I don't know. It just feels more consistent than Claude Code has been for me.
Yeah.
Personally.
Now, are you using the Codex app or are you just using Codex CLI or a combination of both? So how are you using it?
Just the CLI. I haven't touched the app at all, basically. Okay. But it's cool. I mean, there's so many different harnesses out there now that you can use. I kind of wish they would open source the app. Like, they've open sourced the CLI, right?
Yeah.
Which is really neat. You can go in and poke around and see how they're building that system and harness, right? But I don't know. It just feels like it's more consistent than Claude Code in what I'm using it for. I don't know if there's like some workflow I'm missing with Claude Code, but yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because like, you know, everybody has their favorite tool and then the tool shifts, right? You're like, I'm not going to use that anymore because I want to figure this one out. And then you're like, oh my God, this tool's better. It's amazing to see how people are just kind of, it's a fancy way to say it, like oscillating, moving between different tools, testing things. And I think, you know what? It's probably the best way to tackle it because it's moving so fast. There's, you know, so many different options that you have. You got to kind of poke around with all of them, I think, to stay current.
It's really loose. It's flexible. It's easy to swap, right? Like it's not, none of these are super sticky.
Yeah.
I guess the exception is if you get really into... you can port Anthropic models to other things now. Like you can use their API keys in something like, I think T3 code lets you do it. I think maybe Composer might let you do it too now. And they have their own CLIs too that you can use. Apps. So those are on my list to try. This is cool.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is cool. I just wish they would open source it.
I really need to spend some time with it. I don't really know if I care about, you know, automating the apps on my computer. Do I care about the in-app browser? Probably not. I might try it just to see what it does, but to be honest, I don't really care. For me on the Codex app, it's really that automation. I have to sit down because it makes a lot of sense in the workflow that I'm trying to build just as that second set of eyes. And it's not really doing, I'm not giving it enough time to get it to work the way that I want or it should be working to kind of act as the check on whatever the other model is that's actually building the stuff. So yeah, I definitely need to spend some time on that. Just try to sort it out. It's user error for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like there's something there that could be really useful, right? But I mean, we're both kind of server people, back-end computing people, right? So the application is maybe not the most appealing. But if you're working on a front-end app, like having the GUI is nice.
I saw, speaking of front-end app design, I didn't put it in my list, but I think there was something new from Claude, Anthropic again.
Oh, yeah.
Like they had the front end plugin or something, right? Which is actually a pretty slick little way to build like a front end. I've used it to build the front end for OpenBrain and Kanban, nice. Right? I feel really bad for the Tailwind folks because that just
oh my god, Jesus. Yeah. That's rough, right? Like it's what a case of someone coming showing up eating your
lunch. Yeah. Well, now, like I've paid for Tailwind. Not, I don't want to say for a long time, but I paid when they had this, I don't know if this still exists, a long time ago, they had like a one time lifetime subscription. So I gave them like $300 or whatever and got access to all the modules and stuff like that. But man, that's rough, right?
Yeah. That's rough. Claude Design is the thing that they released in beta. Yeah. And yeah, essentially you can, it spin up a whole design language system for what you're working on. So it's their answer to Figma or some kind of slide deck or something like that. Yeah. So
these things are all just eating each other, right? Just like, rah, 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 rah. I'll do that better than you did last week.
at least they're trying to, right?
Another favorite of ours, Cerebrus or something like that. The chip guys. Did you see this one? Filing for an IPO. No date, no value at this point, but essentially they make big chips.
Just filing.
They make big chips. And they also have deals with both AWS and OpenAI to put those chips in. Actually, I worded this weirdly in my cheat sheet. They have a deal with Amazon to put their chips in Amazon data centers. And in addition, they have some other deal with OpenAI, probably for training again, right? Like to use these chips. Yeah. But I the way I wrote it doesn't make any sense. So, hey, that's interesting, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think this is like the second time they've tried to file for
IPO. Is it the second time?
IPO.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense. This is like probably peak demand that they're going to, they'll see, right? Like,
Maybe.
If these data centers keep getting built out.
Yeah, if they have the power for them.
Yeah.
Come on, Keanu. We need fusion power. This is a nice one to just kind of build on the chip idea. I guess it's Google Next right now. And they announced two new chips, TPU chips. There's an 8T for training. There's an 8i or an 8U or something for reasoning. And sort of this idea again of specialized architectures built, well, specifically for AI workloads, no longer sort of these ideas of just general purpose chips, which sort of ties back to the idea of, how do you say it? I always say Cerebus. Is that how you say it?
Is it Cerebrus or
Cerebrus? I don't know. The chip guys, right? So it sort of ties back to the chip guys. It ties back to them and sort of this idea of just the idea of a general purpose chip doesn't really seem to exist anymore, especially for all these AI workloads, right?
Yeah. I mean, NVIDIA is trying to keep their edge, right? But like, it is really hard to get past like the CUDA library. It's so useful for doing this kind of work and training these models. They've optimized it so well for that kind of thing. But I mean, you go and look at who are the companies that have the ability to, one, create these chips, two, train foundation models, three, actually serve them at like a meaningful scale. And it's like, you have Google on that list and you have maybe Amazon sort of, right? Like, and then to get the rest, you have to kind of amalgamate Microsoft with OpenAI with NVIDIA, right? That kind of thing. So,
I it'd be interesting to see all this plays out. I still think you've mentioned this before. Like, this is maybe where Google has a real advantage because it's not like it's not like they just started building these chips. They've been building these Tensor chips for a long, long time, right? I would assume that the vast majority of that compute infrastructure is built on top of these chips. So, you know what? Nice advantage you have, I guess, right now, as long as they can not be Google and turn it into something.
If they could ship a harness that and a model that wasn't like the worst user experience for developers, they would be crushing it right now. But Gemini is not. It's not it.
Yeah,
It's really good at images.
It is. Yeah, the Nano Banana or whatever. Yeah. I haven't used it in a long time. Like I used it the one time to poke at what I had created with Claude, just to kind of do a sanity check on it. Then I got banned, right? After doing market research, and I
forgot about that.
Yeah, and then I was like, for
Christ's sake. How dare you?
I know, right? And then I got it reinstated, and I just really haven't picked it up since, to be honest. Not because of that. I just, to your point, I just meh.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm using anti-gravity as a backlight right now.
As a backlight.
Because I can set the theme really easily to a light theme. So there you go.
That's awesome. probably not in their sort of bucket of how users will use our tool as a backlight. That's fantastic. Okay, what else do we have here? You know, there were a couple interesting articles on Cloudflare again. Man, they've been writing some really interesting takes on stuff and sort of a lot of engineering information on how they're building stuff and what they're building and why they're building it. So I actually put two articles from Cloudflare. There was one about sort of the idea of getting past this bots versus humans sort of conversation we keep having and also the entire engineering stack that they built internally, essentially the platform that they built that they use. So every LLM request at Cloudflare goes through, we've talked about these before, those gateway workers, right? And this is sort of your central location, your security, your keys, your cost tracking, data retention, everything is there. In one central location. So that's really cool. What was the other thing that I wrote down? Oh, they give you some statistics. So this platform that they built, 7 billion tokens a day on Kimi2.5 through AI workers or worker AIs. And that's 77% cheaper than frontier models.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, 2.5 is good enough for a lot of things, so.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Right. And I think this is the trap that I've fallen into. Like, and I gotta untangle myself at some point. When you look at these types of numbers, and to your point, like these models are good enough to get the work done for 77% less cost. It's sort of, you know, do you actually need to use, I'll just pick on Claude because it's my favorite one right now. Like, do you actually need that really expensive frontier model like Claude to do the work that you're doing?
Yeah, and that's going to be a huge consideration for any task you do going forward, right? Yeah. Like, am I being token efficient, or is this model overkill for this task kind of thing? Yeah. If you're getting the subsidized amount of tokens through the subscription, it doesn't matter that much, right?
Yeah,
because you have to burn like $5,000 worth of tokens to go through that.
Yeah.
Or you did anyways before they started having usage problems.
I looked at mine just before the show started, and like I'm only at a third of my weekly quota. A third. Mm. And I bang away at that thing all day, every day. So to your point, like, I guess the challenge is with that sort of token subsidized. Yeah, you're getting tokens for cheap. I feel like Elmer Fudd again. Jesus. Just this idea of like at some point it's going to be less you know what I'm trying to say. Wow, I cannot say that word. It's going to be more expensive, right? But if you get really into that ecosystem, what are you able to exit it efficiently and be as productive using the new tool. And that goes back to what I mentioned earlier. I think it's probably in everybody's best interest, including myself, to use all of these different tools and be familiar and comfortable with all of them in order to avoid putting yourself in a situation where somebody takes that tool away from you and you're like, okay, well, I can do my job, but I'm going to be less effective now because I've lost all of what I've built over here. And now I have to use this other model or other tool.
Yeah, you're
right?
starting
from scratch.
Starting fresh levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like how much of that actually transfers.
Yeah. Yeah. The other
probably really a fair amount.
Yeah. Well, okay. I think that's some of the benefit of things like a second brain or an open brain, getting that context, getting the memories out of that tool. So that if you want to use another tool, you can just say, go over here, whatever you want to call it, and find the information about that project that we were working on.
Right? Yeah, read my docs, my SOPs that we've written in this other system with this other system, and then just go ahead and go from there. Yeah.
Yeah. The other interesting thing, and this reminds me a lot of the article we talked about last week. It was the managed agent articles. Article from Claude, well worth the read on the engineering side. This one is also worth it. Like another thing I wrote down was every merge request gets multi-agent code reviews for security, quality, performance, compliance, and it uses the internal engineering. They called it the codex, but it's an SOP, right? So, hey, this is our institutional knowledge, and you're going to review these merge requests against that, and we're going to have multiple models do it, or multiple agents, I should say, do that before they're deployed, right? Pretty slick.
Yeah, that makes total makes sense. Yeah, that's so cool. I'm gonna do such a deep dive into this article.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And then the other one is that bots versus humans idea here.
Right.
And they're sort of the premise of the article is this idea of bots versus humans is kind of a little outdated already, in the sense that what's really important here is the intent or the behavior of those relationships, not necessarily like the categorization of how bots versus humans are working. So they're really talking about sort of how we need to get past this idea of it's us versus them and how we're going to kind of work together more efficiently is the way I interpret it. I don't know if that's exactly their intent or not, but that's kind of what I thought of it.
That makes sense. I mean, lines up with their spec for the CDN on the raw HTML, right? For for static websites, that kind of thing. So make it more easily consumable and more token efficient. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And when everyone has their personal bots that are going to hit the web, you know, to query whatever, make run 6 or 7 or 10 or 20 web searches in a row. Like it's gotta be such an interesting problem to deal with.
Well,
how do you identify what's malicious, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And like, isn't there some stat out there already that even before all of this, like the vast majority of the traffic on the internet was bots anyways?
Yeah.
Right. So like maybe we have more now where those bots are a little better / more efficient. Than they maybe were in the past. But you know what's interesting? I baked my own monitoring is there metrics for the podcast. So it's all self-hosted now. There's another example of getting rid of a SaaS tool, right? So it's all self-hosted now in S3 for like pennies a month, all served through CloudFront. And right now I'm doing it probably once a week. I ask Claude to go through the CloudFront logs because I know the numbers that are in that metrics, they're not right. Like it's picking up bots and stuff like that, right? But it's pretty interesting little exercise to essentially, you know, there's another good use case. I should fire like Kimmy at it or Gemini or Codex or something. Say, go look at these logs and help me determine what is valuable in the sense that, you know, a bot did this versus an actual, in our case, listener, like a human that's consuming this information. Yeah. And it's really interesting to see how Claude is doing it and using a standard. It's an IAB standard, something about some broadcasting standard on how they determine what qualifies as a listen in a podcast.
This is how you determine how many listeners you have for ad for marketing purposes.
Yeah, you know, because this is our retirement plan right here, right? Like I've got so many advertisers lined up. I needed to
totally.
Be able to, oh yeah, man. Like tens of thousands of downloads.
Down the door.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, like, you know, remember we were talking about the Steam guy with his yacht? I'm gonna have one of those just from the podcast. And instead of instead of the video game room, it's just going to be like a podcast studio. Yeah. With cool lighting and shit. So
you have your own Edge AWS rack in there.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. I need my local processing power.
That's right.
And you can move it between regions as you yacht around the world. You can just, oh, don't connect me to US West 2 anymore. I want AP. I don't know what the Tokyo one is. We've gone across the Pacific, so whatever's in Tokyo, we want you to connect to that now. But it's actually, joking aside, it's interesting to see the amount of bots that are hitting it, and then watching the tools try to figure out, based on that IAB standard, you know, is this a person? Does it qualify as a download? It's really right. actually. Quite interesting to see. The vast majority of the traffic is bots, right?
Yeah, that makes crawlers. Sense. I mean, I'm kind of curious now. I guess, like, you have to actually pull down the entire file potentially?
Yeah,
to qualify.
It's got like a no. It's a certain amount of time. So it's like they generate. They consider it a listener if it's X number of minutes listened, and they determine that. I hope I'm not messing this up. Claude will be very disappointed in me because we've been having extensive conversations on how this works. Right? It determines that listen time based on the number of bytes downloaded, and it grabs the bytes from the logs. So it looks and says, "Oh, well, that's not enough bytes to basically say that person or whatever it was listened for more than X minutes, therefore we won't count that as a listener." It's a very regimented standard that exists, and I've been sort of cherry picking from it as I've built the metric stuff out, because I'm like I don't know what this is and I really don't care. I'm interested to see what the downloads are, right? And I found out very quickly. I was like, oh man, we have the best podcast on the internet. But then I was like, oh wait, I've made a tactical error. So that's when I think the conversation went something like this. I don't think these numbers are true. Could you help me understand the logs? And it's like, do you know about this standard? And I was like, I do not. Why don't you tell me about this standard? And yeah.
That's actually kind of an interesting hard problem, right? Because like, I guess you have to dedupe everything, right?
Yep.
There's probably some like device signatures that you don't want to count, I imagine.
Yep. Yep. They look for
like minimum
agent strings and stuff like that. So they know,
okay,
you know, there's documented agent strings for Apple Podcasts. There's documented agent strings for insert your other thing. One that was really interesting, it's like, hey, look at all these Apple listeners. And I love this. It's like, I don't know if this was 4.6 or 4.7. It's like, oh, look at all these Apple listeners. Wait a second. That's what it actually typed, right? And I was like, uh-oh, what's happening?
Uh-oh.
and just to stay on our movie theme, dun-dun-dun, right? Like, here we go. And it's like, oh, this agent doesn't match the documented standard for Apple Podcast. It should look like this.
Oh.
Here are the acceptable values. I'll make it up, like 5.1. Huh. And this one's 5.11. That's not in the documented standard, therefore it's probably a bot spoofing.
Yeah,
right, we'll filter those. It's like, what the hell, right? The amount of work that must go into this, to your point, is like mind-boggling just to try to get real numbers on something.
Yeah, just a weird little thing that I've never thought about before, but now that you bring it up, like, how do they do that?
So I can guarantee we have one listener.
It's probably me.
No, okay, but then we have two. It's you, and it's probably your bot that's actually listening. It's pulling it down to do the analysis on it. And the other listener is my mom.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she's a subscriber. She has no idea what we talk about, but She still doesn't quite understand how I don't sell stuff on the Amazon store. I'm picking on my mom. It's actually not true. She knows what I do. Honest. Yeah. Okay. I think that is everything that I had sort of to talk about. Was there anything that you had on your list that we didn't get to?
Nothing crazy. KBK 2.6 came out. It's pretty good.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Besides that, no, pretty much covered it. Yeah. Just wanted to talk about the Opus things.
Yeah. No, let's talk about the Kimi 2.6 thing, because I did miss that one as I was scrolling through my list. A couple things jumped out at me. Because we were talking about this too, they called it the long horizon. And they said in the article, more than 12 hours on a single task. And it did some crazy stuff. Like, they tasked it with installing a model locally and then using, is it Zig? To like do some sort of programming, and it ran for like more than 12 hours to figure it out.
The Zig optimization they did is really interesting, actually. So I don't know. Are you familiar with Zig at all?
I think you've mentioned it to me. It's a really kind of unique programming language, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. It's in the vein of like, we want to make C2 that isn't C++ kind of language, but with better ergonomic than workflows and memory safety, but same kind of idea. But essentially, they wrote the entire, they had it train, download, and deploy Qwen 3.5 something, one of the smaller models locally.
Yeah.
Oh, 0.8b.
Okay.
And then optimize the inference in Zig. 4,000 tool calls.
Yeah.
12 hours of continuous execution, 14 iterations. That's crazy.
Crazy, right? And this is the first time I've ever heard, I know we've talked about Kimi before. This was the first time when we first started talking about this that I heard this term agent swarms. And they said in the article now they're able to scale horizontally up to, I think it was 300 sub-agents. So,
Yeah.
Right?
So if you have a massively parallelizable LLM task, the Kimi models are pretty interesting for that.
Yeah.
If you need to go and search a bunch of different files or locations. Yeah. But yeah, I just think that's really cool. And it got it optimized the throughput from 15 to 193 tokens per second.
Yeah.
20% faster than LM Studio, apparently. And 12 hours, like just last week, I think it was, we were talking about the horizons. Yeah. And we were like, 8 hours is like kind of the longest achieved at the moment. Now we're at 12. So here we go.
Yep. It's just going to, and then next week we'll have another model that says, hey, we went for 14, right? Like, it's a great time to be alive. As long as you can afford RAM.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. So no, that's a good one. I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I kind of, as we were talking about those different chips and stuff, I moved past that one. I sound like a bro. I listen to these things after, or I ask Claude. I can't listen to myself. That's weird. But I ask Claude, and I'm like, summarize the talking points. And I'm like, dude, I repeat myself a lot. Like, I just keep coming up with the same. My brain just keeps triggering on these same themes, right? Here's another example. Like, this is a model that you probably should muck around with and figure out, right? Because it's just another tool in your tool belt.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. All right. Well, outside of recommendations, I think that's the show, unless there's anything else that I missed.
No, I don't think so. I do have a recommendation for Anthropic.
Oh, yeah?
That's that they should point Mythos at their MCP server, maybe.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, it makes sense, right?
Yeah, maybe patch a few vulnerabilities, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if this is a recommendation, but that comment about the engineering stack at Cloudflare and the idea of having multiple agents review merge records, merge requests. Yeah. I'm going to try to figure that out. Like, not that same I'm dealing here with the scale like that, but my general rule right now, the way I approach it is, and primarily Claude, but I've done a little bit of this with Gemini as well. Like, you decide. Like, you have to, GitLab is the single source of truth. And I know people would argue, well, then you shouldn't have your agents in there, because how do you know what they're writing is true? okay, I get it, right? I get it. But the way I'm approaching it is like, listen, I want these agents to do the majority of the work. And what I've been able to sort of, I hope this isn't just luck, but it's worked very well so far, is the agent basically determines if it should just do the merge itself or a human needs to be involved, right? So use the same example earlier on. Like if you're making a documentation change, just make it. You don't need to ask me. Tell me when it's done and I will read it, but don't wait for me on the merge request, right? Versus, hey, we're going to do, because we were talking about the monitoring, we're going to do an update to the DynamoDB table that stores all of your metric data. Okay, you're changing the infrastructure at that point. You don't do that. You create a merge request and you assign it to me, right?
That gets elevated.
Yeah, I will review that and then decide whether it goes forward or if I have follow-up questions. But what I'm thinking is I think those still need to be gated by a human. But if Claude does the work, how do I fire up, I don't know, just because I mentioned it, how do I fire Gemini to say there's a new merge request? You read it first. You update it or add questions or whatever before it comes to me. So now you have multiple agents in the loop. Like, I think that's really cool. Man, there goes my evenings again, right?
I was just thinking the same thing. This is like part of the factory design, right? If you think about it, you should have like, you're going to have like the production cell where you're writing out, you're making PRs, right? You're turning out code to do tackle your tasks. And then you have the review section, which should, you know, have multiple processes that fire up. And there's no reason you can't fire up multiple agents to pull different contexts and review the code with different, you know, tool sets, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I'm leaning to.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this week. I am going to go back to Gemini. Again, I'm ignoring Codex. I don't know why. I never think about Codex.
It's
It's good? Okay. So, I'm going to either use Codex or Gemini, and I'm going to see if I can figure out a way, and I will use the LLM to do this, basically explain the workflow to it, and say, this is what I want you to do. You're going to see a merge request, right? And I'm going to have basically a trigger or something off of that. I'll let it decide how it wants to do it. But anytime you see a merge request that is assigned to me, you need to review it. And then I'm going to see if I can wire that up. It's probably just like a GitLab trigger.
It's the hook. Yeah. Just some kind of Git hook you could do with that, I'm sure.
A server-side hook.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right.
It's dangerous.
Here we go. So it begins. Any other recommendations on your side?
Go outside. The weather's nice. besides that.
Yeah.
What are we watching? We're watching we're getting caught up on The Boys. That's what we're doing.
Oh.
We're watching Gen V. We just finished both seasons and now we're going to start season 4 of The Boys, I think it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? The Boys is kind of like Codex. I just have never gotten into it. I just can't. I don't know what it is. I just never kind of, I was just like, meh. And just went and did something else. I like the outside recommendation. I think Simon Willison said that in a podcast I watched. I'm pretty sure it was him. He's like, you should go outside. And the other one is something else is keeping me up at night, not just Claude, and I think I mentioned this last week. I'm not sure now. Red Rising.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Such a good book. So a gaming friend of mine suggested it. It is really, really good. It's giving me, nice. I don't want to give the book away because I think I said this last week. I went in blind and I was just like, okay, you recommended this to me. I'm putting it on the Kindle. I'm just going to read it. Didn't read the synopsis, nothing, right? And it's giving me Silo vibes. It's giving me kind of Matrix vibes in the sense, like, not Matrix where you're like picking up a phone and you're going to an alternative reality or anything, but just the idea of like that men are, humans are batteries, right? You're essentially just an energy source for something else, right? So it's got a little vibes like that. I'm missing another one that I wrote back to my friend about, like when she asked me about it, I'm like, okay, these are the things that are kind of jumping out at me in themes. It's really good. Like I was up till almost 1 last night. I'm a little ragged today because I'm like, just one more chapter And then I keep flipping. I'm like, okay, I got to read one more chapter. I was kind of like binge reading instead of binge watching something on Netflix. They need to turn this into a movie. Like, I'm not even through the first book. I think there's, it's a series, 4 or 5 books. Yeah. I don't know. This should be a movie. I remember the other one. It's giving me Dune vibes in a good way, in the sense that, you know, humans have conquered the galaxy. Very Star Warsy too, in the sense that, you know, hey, we have all these ships that can go all over the place and we can terraform planets, but we still fight with swords. Right.
Okay. Like, I'm sold.
I don't
say
get
Dune,
it. Right?
I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. And, here's another silly analogy, Firefly, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Essentially space cowboys. You're running around the entire galaxy and you still got a six shooter on your hip, but you have a spaceship capable of interstellar travel, but you've got a six shooter. It's weird.
Yeah.
But it's fun, right? So yeah, if you're looking for something non-work related to add to your reading list, I will continue to recommend that, and I'll have to find something new for next week. Can't nice. three weeks in a row, right? I can't have the same recommendation.
I'm gonna find that now and pick it up, because that sounds right up my alley.
Yeah. I'm about, according to the Kindle, I think I'm about, 70% through the first book. It's good. It's good. I should probably, I don't know, I can't see outside. I don't know if it's still bright or not. I should probably go outside and read a book.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
It's actually nice enough to sit outside, potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. That is the show.
That's another show.
Another show. There it still is. No intro. Still no outro. But we will play. Oh wait, make sure I hit the right button here. I got a Steam Deck update today and it mucked up all my keys. We'll see everybody next week.
No.